Now, Dr. Kazemi's presentation.
Hello, everyone. My name is Donna Kazemi. I am a faculty member at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, in the College of Health and Human Services in the School of Nursing. I am also the director of a SAMHSA program. It's a three-year funded program to address underage drinking among freshmen using brief motivational interviewing. This is the preliminary results from baseline 3 months of one of our first studies that we've had coming out of that three-year program. We are currently in year three of the three-year program funded by SAMHSA. I would like to acknowledge my colleagues that have been working on our research team, Lynn Sun, Dr. Neese, Dr. Demakowski, and Samuel Walford. I have no disclosures, but this program is funded by SAMHSA. To begin, I'd like to talk a little bit about the risk factors related to underage drinking among college students. I know this is a little repetitive, but it's important to understand that alarming numbers of underage college students are drinking very heavily. Not only are they drinking, but they're binge drinking, with considerable risks not only to themselves, but to individuals that are associated with them. The consequences are the consequences are tremendous. They have blackouts, they have rape from unprotected sexual contacts, suicides, violence, STIs that are associated with this type of behaviors. This is a major public health problem with far-reaching implications, not only for the individual, but for the families, for the communities, for society at large. You've heard some of this, but the American College Health Association, some of the recent findings that they've had from 2009, they looked at over 34,000 students and found that 60% of them had been drinking within the last 30 days. Of this, 15% reported being physically injured, 31% did something that they later regretted, 26% blacked out, and 15% engaged in some type of unprotected sexual contacts. Each year, there are over 2.8 million driving while under the influence accidents associated with underage drinking, 1,700 alcohol-related deaths. You see this in the press all the time. These tragic situations where college students are dying related to the behaviors, the drinking behaviors. In North Carolina alone, in the last year, we've had at least two students that have died at major universities. They fall off the roofs, you know, they have alcohol poisoning. It's not only just the injuries related to driving and not only injuring themselves. We had a 19-year-old killed who was a passenger in a car, and there were five students in that car, and he was the only one who did not have a seatbelt on, and the Jeep rolled over, and he was killed. And it tragic situations. 700,000 sexual assaults, 400,000 students reported unprotected sex. This is the tip of the iceberg. This is the tip of the iceberg. We know that sexual contacts are often go unreported. So HIV, all the STIs, which can be the result of engaging behaviors that were never intended, rape, sexual assault. So I just wanted to point out that this is a major, major issue. And freshmen, it is in the literature, it is known that freshmen are at very high risk. They're at higher risk than the other non-freshmen. And, you know, the first 6 to 8 weeks is a very high risk time for freshman students, and you're probably very aware of the reasons. They are moving, they have new independence from their families, many of them. They're living in crowded dorms. They're very influenced by their peers. We have many factors involved here. We have environmental factors, we have policies on campus. Some campuses have amnesty policies, some campuses don't. Some campuses have easy access to alcohol outlets, and some don't. So there are many, many ideological factors that are involved with why these students are at such high risk. Now, to talk about our study, the aim of our study was we had implemented a basics program. This is a brief alcohol screening and intervention for college students. Basics is very widely used. It's commonly used on many, many campuses. And this was our preliminary baseline three-month data from a three-year program that implemented this program. So we wanted to start very early on to determine how effective was the program in reducing high-risk drinking and the negative consequences that are associated with it. The research questions that we were looking at was, is there a significant reduction in the maximum number of drinks consumed between baseline and 3 months, and did we have a reduction in the alcohol-related consequences between baseline and 3 months? Our theoretical framework was the trans-theoretical model. This is a very widely used Procrastina DiClemente model, very widely known. It's not only used for drinking behaviors, but for many behaviors, smoking, obesity, many different types of behaviors. Just to give you a quick overview, this has five stages, pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, and maintenance. And if an individual is in a pre-contemplation stage, they're not thinking about the behavior. They have no recognition that there's a behavior that needs to be changed. An individual in the contemplation stage recognizes the behavior but isn't willing to make any commitment to changing the behavior. Somebody in preparation has actually started to make a commitment to change a behavior within the next month. Action, they've changed the behavior from 1 month to 6 months, and maintenance is 6 months to a year that the behavior is actually changed. This is a spiral model. A person can move from different stages. They can skip stages. They can go to maintenance. It's very common for someone to go from maintenance and then go back to pre-contemplation. It's very difficult to change high-risk behaviors. It's very difficult if you're a smoker or a drinker or have a weight problem to change that behavior. What's very interesting is DiClemente in 2005 and 2007 has updated this model to look at the contextual processes, the intentional behavioral change that can inhibit movement through the change process. So this is very relevant for freshmen. Very, very relevant, because as I pointed out, there are many ideological factors that inhibit them, many multidimensional problems that can inhibit them from going through the change process. And one thing they know about this model is that you need to have some planning and organizing abilities, problem solving, to move through the different stages. Of course, the better you can plan, the better organized, the more you will be able to move through the different stages. Well, this is contrary to freshmen. Okay, freshmen come in, it's a developmental stage. Okay, they're transitioning from that adolescence to young adults. They are risk takers, they're sensation seeking. And this is just not on their radar at that age. Current research findings, NIAAA has the basics program is a tier one program. What makes that a tier one program? It is effective. It is shown to be effective in college students. It uses that cognitive behavioral skills approach. The CBT, the cognitive behavioral therapy, it reinforces positive thinking. It does norms clarification. So it takes that social norming. We know freshmen come in and they are very influenced by their peers. They do what the peers tell them to do. They think everybody else is drinking. So a basics program will normalize that thinking for them. So it is demonstrated to be very effective. Also, what we know is the trans-theoretical model is very effective. It does a readiness to change based on the stages of the trans-theoretical model. The more somebody's ready to change, the more they actually may change behavior. But we also know from the research that basics is effective, and it is effective with poorly motivated students. So what's new? Well, there is limited research on the sustainability of basics, and we need more empirical support for the basics, more standardized methods. There's a lot of research out there. For example, a lot of studies have small sample sizes. A lot of studies have not shown real sustainability. There's very poor retention with college students. So these are some of the issues that they have. Now, the design of our program, what was different with our program? We have an enhanced basics model. We took the basics and we enhanced it to a step care model. Which means that not only are we offering the core basics, but we're looking at the whole person. And we're offering integrated services. We're not just looking at the alcohol behaviors. What we realized very early on when we started to take in the first cohort of freshmen is that these freshmen are individual. They have all different experiences. Many have started drinking when they were 12 or 13 or younger. Some are coming to college and they have had no experiences. So you can't just, you have to look at the individual. You have to look at their illegal substance use, their drinking behaviors. Some of them are using alcohol and drugs. You know, some of them are much more high risk than other students. So we're looking at that. And we were also started to look at the cultural, providing cultural care. We had 102 freshmen. That was our sample size. Their mean age was 18, all freshmen, mostly Caucasian and female. But we also had a representative of a very nice ethnic distribution, mostly Caucasian, 68%, 24% black, African Americans, 4% Latino, and 4% Asian, representative of the college campus. Our school has over 25,000 students. Most of the students are Caucasian. There's a little bit more females than males. So our 900 participants that we eventually are taking in are representative of the campus community. So our study methods, we, of course, we're using the basics program. And just to let you know, it has two 15-minute sessions. It uses brief motivational interviewing and during the two sessions, and then we did a booster session at 3 months. So what we were looking at was the baseline and 3 months. We staged our participants, so we used three instruments, the DDQ, the daily drinking questionnaire. That measures the frequency and quantity of their drinking. Also gives us temporal patterns of drinking because it looks at it during the week. So we could tell and during the previous month. Just to let you know that the students drink more during the holidays. They drink more, obviously, at spring break is a very big drinking time. So there are definitely temporal patterns of drinking. The brief readiness to change, that had three subscales, the pre-contemplation, the contemplation, and the action, 12 items, and the RAPI to determine the consequences of their behaviors, 23 items. Some of the consequences, for example, some of the items would be, were they able to do their homework? Were they dizzy? You know, were they blacking out? So these just typical consequences of this type of behaviors. The majority of our participants, 102, were in the pre-contemplation stage. That's what you expect. That's where the freshmen are. So 54% of them were pre-contemplators. But interestingly, we had 30% in action. That is very interesting, that 30% of them were in action. So that was an also very, very interesting finding. So here are our results. The average number of drinks consumed per episode dropped from 12.6. We used paired t-tests to detect the changes in drinking and the consequences. So it dropped from 12.6 to 7.3, a difference of 5 drinks. The number of drinking hours dropped from 9 to 6 to around 6, which was 3 hours. This is between baseline and 3 months. The maximum drinking dropped from 5 to 3.4, a difference of 1.8. And the frequency of drinking more than 5 drinks in a row, the binging, dropped from 1.4 to 0.6, which is 0.8. And the consequences dropped from 11 to 7.9. a difference of 3.4. So those were those findings. And then we use the McNamara test for the correlated proportions. And this is also very, very interesting. You can see that the proportionately between baseline and 3 months, that at 3 months we had the cutoff is 10 consequences. So it did shift to having proportionally fewer consequences at the three-month point. And here we put this in percentages so you could see this. At baseline, our high risks related to consequences were 52% versus 30% at 3 months. So a shift of a good 20% of them went from very high risk behaviors at baseline to not being to low risk at 3 months. Okay, to summarize our findings then, both of our research questions were supported: the mean number of drinks, the drinking hours, the maximum drinking and frequency of drinking, consuming more than 5 drinks in an episode, significantly declined. Our p-values were excellent, way lower than 0.01, very significant findings. We had a confidence interval of 95%. So there was a significant decline. Also, we saw our second research question was supported with a decrease in the drinking related consequences between baseline and 3 months. Over 50% of our participants were high risk at baseline compared with 30% at the 3 month session. Like all studies, we had limitations. I just want to mention these briefly. It's self-report. All campuses are different. This is a large public university with over 25,000 students in the southeastern United States. So that how generalizable this is to other institutions may be limited. And just to summarize our implications, which are important to understand, this is baseline 3 months. We are now in the third year of the program. We did show a significant association with our preliminary results and have continued to do so since then of a reduction in changes in the high-risk behavior and consequences. What the most important thing that we've learned over the last 3 years is BASICS is very good. It's a very good program, but, you know, it is very important to look at the whole person, to tailor the interventions to the individual, to look at providing cultural care, that everybody is different and has a different time frame. Thank you.